And then I was like, yeah, the helicopter's here. Let me take my picture. And I took a picture. And Christina told me, like, last year that you were taking pictures with no phone in your hand. You were drinking water from a bottle and there was no bottle in your hand. You were completely gone, mate.
Hey everyone, I'm Katie Traxton and welcome to Anatomy of an Agency, the podcast that introduces you to the real people involved in the entertainment world. From the talent themselves to commercial partners to promoters to the agents, we've got them all covered to bring you up to speed with this fast-paced industry. This week, we have someone with a new talent joining us. We are used to sports people, actors, singers, dancers, but this week we are joined by professional mountaineer, Aki Rahman. Aki is from Manchester and became the first British Asian to climb Mount Everest, no less while fasting for Ramadan. He's recently climbed Everest again as part of the 14 Peak Challenge, which we will get into later. He has a fascinating story of determination, death-defying trips, and a push for social change. But why does a professional mountaineer need an agent?
In order for me to channel that thing that I bring, the motivation and the inspiration and the resilient aspect, I do need a way to funnel that. And personally, I don't have that. And through an agent who has contacts like yourself, I could do that through various brands and, you know, little jobs here and there and whatever I can do, get my hands on, really. So it helps to get the message out.
What made you want to inspire and motivate people for a living? Because it sounds really worthy, right, doesn't it? It sounds like, oh, all of us would love to do that. But actually, most people wouldn't. It's actually really fun, not bothering.
I know. I guess I'm one of those people. I started off to try and inspire my children. I want to be something more. For my children, for them to think my dad is somebody, and so that they can, you know, try and make something of their lives. And that's where it all started, and then it sort of spiraled out, and I thought, you know what, this is good. If we can get everyone, you know, because I'm a mountaineer, I guess you could probably say I'm a professional mountaineer.
Oh, probably, maybe.
Maybe.
You've not done much, focusing on the 14 peaks, but see what we do next
week. Yeah, I've climbed Everest twice, once while I was fasting. Half the expedition was while I was fasting, and I just did it this year again with the addition of Lhotse. So I did two in a go. But yeah, I mean, going back to your question, it all started off with them, and then I thought, you know what, I'm a mountaineer and I keep myself fit through all these things that I do, and I try to stay fit. Not at the moment, but I'm off duty now. But I try to keep myself fit, and I thought, you know what, I've lost, in the early days, I was able to shed 10 kilograms within the space of 2.5 months. And I thought to myself, this is really good. We need to get more people onto it. And I thought, okay, yeah, I'll do my mountaineering, it's fine. And I'll stay fit for that. But because of the process that's involved, I thought I'd use it to try and inspire others to get off their couches and do some running and stuff. And going out into the outdoors is really, you know, stimulating. I find it peaceful.
And so let's backtrack a bit so we explain for the people listening. I think probably most people listening, we're going to go with know that Everest is the tallest mountain in the world. And so it's quite something just to have reached the summit of Everest once, let alone twice, and definitely while fasting. But can you explain for some context so that they really understand, oh my goodness, this is next level, like mountaineering, what the 14 peaks are that you're undertaking the challenge of at the moment?
Yeah, well, the 14 peaks are the 14 highest mountains in the world. They are all over 8,000 meters, and there's only 14 of them. And I'm going to be obviously climbing every single one of them, hopefully, fingers crossed, I survive it. But yeah, I mean, it's a technical endeavor. It's not just a simple case of coming to the base of a mountain and just walking up, because you have to spend a lot of time acclimatizing. The acclimatizing process is quite, you know, it can get quite technical. So basically, when we arrive at base camp, but we're at maybe 5,000, 5,500 meters, the oxygen concentration in the air is actually 50% there. So it's whatever you're breathing now, it's 100%, and over there it's 50%. So it's a lot harder to breathe. So every movement that you make, it's you know, labored, it feels labored. So we have to stay at that zone for maybe a few days, let our hemoglobin, the red blood cells, replicate. And once they replicate, they can carry the oxygen to our body, to our organs, into our body, to our organs. So that's like the science behind it. And these things take a little bit of time. That's why it takes, you know, you can't just 8,000 meters. Anyone could probably do it, you know, I can run 8,000 meters in about 40 minutes or less. but, you know, to climb it, you couldn't do it in a day. You'd have to take your time because as you go higher, the oxygen depletes more.
And how many people, we'll give you a tolerance of a couple because we didn't tell you we were going to ask this. How many people have ever climbed all 14 peaks?
Let me put it into context. Off the top of my head, I think 0.0004% of the world's population have climbed Everest. That's 6,000 people and about 11,000 summits, or maybe a bit more now. And what I'm proposing, I think less than 60 people have done it in history. So it's quite big, but achievable.
and this is why I kind of wanted to give this context of, it's one thing, which is great, and I would love it if everyone is doing it, to say, I want to inspire people, I want to motivate. But the level to which you're pushing yourself in order to claim, I'm an authority on this subject, is kind of that which you could argue qualifies you to say, well, I want to have someone by my side, albeit in this context, an agent, in order to enable me to spread the word of what I'm doing. Because I have learned lessons that not many people have access to have learned.
Yeah, no, that's 100% right. This is what I aim to do. I want to try and, you know, get my message across to as many people as I can. Because climbing has taught me a lot about myself and how humans can push themselves beyond what they believe. You know, I mean, it's a difference. I almost died on one of the mountains before I climbed Everest in 21 days, which was quite fast. I almost died 6 months prior on Amma de Blam. And I thought that I was at my limit on Amma de Blam. And then when I was given the chance to go back to Everest, I learned a whole new spectrum of things about myself and my body and how humans, you know, believe they're at one stage and they think they're at the saturation point, but they can get even higher. So this is what I want to tell people and tell my story, basically.
When you almost died, what made you keep going? Why didn't you throw in the towel?
It wasn't enough. I mean, I had a goal, I had an ambition in mind, and I just wanted to carry on forward. And let me tell you a bit of the story anyway. When I was on Amma de Blam, Amma de Blam is 6,800 meters, 2,000 less than Everest. I had come back from a 2020 climb on Elbrus, which I did in a day, 5 days after recovering from COVID. And this was all over the news saying it was like a record breaking thing. But I felt, you know, like I could do it faster. And I thought, you know what, I'll cut this 25-day expedition to 15 days, challenge myself and do it. Because this is me pushing my boundaries and the resilience coming up. And I went and I lost 4 days to bad weather.
So you wanted to do it 40% quicker?
Yes.
Not like, oh, I'll do it 5% quicker. 40%
no.
quicker.
If you're going to go, you're going to go big, aren't you?
Yeah, cool. Go big or go home, Mackie.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I'm not being egotistic, but... but I went and I lost like 3 or 4 days due to bad weather. And then somebody told me, if they can't fly the plane, just get a helicopter, you'll fly under the clouds. I'm like, well, then why didn't you tell me this like 3 days ago? My cameraman actually said that to me. He suggested the idea to go in a helicopter.
I said, oh dear.
Yeah. So I said, yeah, let's go in a helicopter. We got there and I trekked to base camp. It's like a 5 day trek. I got there in like 2 days. And then I got like a stomach bug because they gave me some pizza and I had it and I got a stomach bug and I was up all night.
Was it Hawaiian?
No, it was like a seafood pizza.
It's
like a seafood pizza. They had a bit of raw fish or something in there.
Oh.
It really got to me, and all night I couldn't sleep. I was back and forth, you know, doing my business. And then in the morning I woke up and I said to them, I'm going to Camp One. And they were like, no, why do you want to go to Camp One? Why don't you just rest and recover? Let your body, you know, get used to it. And I'm like, nah, who are you guys? I climbed Elbrus in a day. And who are you to tell me what to do?
And I went.
I walked, it's a 5 hour trip, and after 5 hours I was still another 2 hours away and I was completely gone. I can't remember anything. And I was, it was the hardest day of my life on the mountain. And I thought to myself, you know what? There's a tent there. There was an emergency tent already set up. I think somebody else might have left it there, or the authorities might have left it there. And I said to my guide, I'm gonna go there and I'm gonna sleep there. I'm not going up and I'm not going down. And he was like, yeah, okay, he was a younger guy. And he just said, yeah, okay. So I went there, slept maybe 13 hours, and I woke up and I was all delusional. I was completely gone.
What happened? Did you survive?
I did. Of course, I'm here. No, I'm back from the... I got up and he asked me, what do you want to do? I go, let's go up. But I didn't realize, because I was still lying down, that something was going on. And he could probably tell by the way I was acting. And then I can't remember. He must have helped me put my boots on. And then I got out and then I go, I need to go. And he's like, just go there. I'm like, all right, okay. I did my business and then he goes, let's go. And I tried to move and I couldn't move my body. My muscles started giving up. I started developing, you know, high altitude cerebral edema. And I started losing control of my body. And then he's like, we need to go down. I was like, yeah, I think we do need to go down.
So that's swelling around the brain, that's, right? Yeah, because of the altitude.
Yeah, because of the lack of oxygen in your body and in your brain, your brain starts to swell. So this is like really early on, like when after I woke up, and I tried to walk down sort of limping and him holding me and dragging me down. And then I started getting delusional and I started, you know, seeing things and talking to, you know, people that were not there. And eventually it got to a stage where I'd sat down and I wasn't moving. I'm like, I want to take a rest. And then one of the climbers that did the 13 peaks, she got the record, Christina Harrell, she was coming down from an acclimatization or maybe from the summit, I can't remember exactly. And then she stopped and she's like trying to help me, like, okay, you need to go down. And I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna go down. I think I can do it. Cause I'm high, remember, cause I'm delusional and I don't exactly know what's going on. It's like I'm drunk. And
not that you would know what being drunk is like.
Not that I would know what drunk is being like, but I assume it's like that. And then she said to me, you need to go down. I'm like, nah. And then a doctor comes and he goes, what the F are you guys playing at? Get this guy down. Can you not see he's not in the right state of mind to make his own decision? And then eventually they got a helicopter. And then I was flown off from the helicopter to Kathmandu. And actually, I agreed to the helicopter. I wasn't agreeing to anything because I just wanted to go walk down myself. And I had a hallucination that one of the climbers who I look up to was going to come rescue me because he's also a rescue helicopter. And I thought to myself, it's going to be worth it to get rescued by him, to get a selfie with him. So then they got this helicopter. And then I was like, yeah, the helicopter's here. Let me take my picture. And I took a picture. And Christina told me, like, last year that you were taking pictures with no phone in your hand. You were drinking water from a bottle and there was no bottle in your hand. You were completely gone, mate. So they took me to Kathmandu. I've come to learn because I didn't know at the time where I was. And I woke up and then the first thing I thought was, how do I get back to the mountain? And the expedition company director, he was there and he asked me my name and I started giving him my name, my address. I even gave him my passport number just to show him that, yeah, I'm still there, I'm okay. But I wasn't there at all because I couldn't stand up and it's like I had vertigo, you know, when I was standing up, it felt like I was sideways. So I spent 2 days in ICU, 3 days in observation, and then they let me out on a Saturday morning. And I sort of floated the idea of going back to Amada Blam, and they said, if you go back, you might even die. I'm like, yeah, you guys don't know what you're talking about. So they let me go on a Saturday morning. I had difficulties walking up to the third floor hotel room that I had. But nevertheless, the resilience kicked in, and on Monday morning, I got another helicopter back to base camp, and I tried to climb it.
And did you manage it?
I got to 6,500 meters of the 6,800. And then we were on an open exposed ridge and the wind was like flinging me around. I was probably 40% of the man I was when I first went there. And my guide's like, that's it, mate. I'm not going any further. I'm like, yeah, okay, let's go back.
Gosh. So, but one of the things that has struck me from this is often you can learn more through stories of, we could call it failure. We could call it attempts at success. Than you do from the successes. You said that one of the reasons that it's important for you to have an agent to be able to share your story, to be able to inspire other people, is that you can teach them the lessons that you've learned. Have you learned more from that which has gone right or from that which has gone wrong?
I can tell you that on the way down, I was kind of reluctant to not to turn around. But on the way down, I struggled a lot. I ended up with digitalia parasthetica. I lost sensation on all of my toes because I'd walked so much that my nerves were flattened. So it took about 8 weeks to recover from that. But what I can say is that I learned a lot about myself and the fact that I know when enough is enough. Because on the way down, I told my guide, listen, I think it was the right decision to go down because I'm struggling to go down. I might have made it to the top, but I know for a fact if I'd gone to the top, now I know that I wouldn't have been able to come down. So that was something I learned. I need to know where my limits are. My limits may increase, you know, over the course of time, but at any given time, you have to know where to draw the line. And that's what I learned. And that is my, even though I climbed Everest in 21 days, half of it while fasting, I think that is one of the most important climbs of my climbing career. Career, if you would call it a career.
Well, career, yes. So you clearly have a lot of motivation from within, but I think what's been interesting during this podcast chatting to people is that getting from a dream, an ambition, tenacity, talent, through to realizing the goal that they want to achieve often requires quite a significant support network. And we've been speaking about agents, we've been speaking about people who take a similar role, a mentor or a coach along the way. Mm-hmm. You specifically homed in on the aspect of the agent relationship in giving you access to the business world. But how did you manage to get from being a kid in Greater Manchester to doing these unbelievable climbs?
It's kind of a lengthy story, but because as a child I was very athletic.
What's the short version?
The short version is I was athletics, triple jump champion of Greater Manchester, 100 meters in 11 and a half seconds when I was 14, and then it got to a stage where I was too old to do any of that stuff, and I can't be a
footballer. That's only about half my time.
No. Later on in life, when I decided to do something when I had kids and stuff, and I just thought, you know what, I can't do any of these things. Let me do something different. Let me motivate the community, the nation in a different way, and see if they will hop on. Because I'm from a ethnic minority background, and a lot of people in the ethnic minority they suffer with like heart disease and diabetes and your usual stuff because of the diet that we have. And I think half of that could be avoided just through exercise, just like half an hour a day for 5 days or 4 days. I think that could be avoided, and that's one of my motivations to carry on doing what I do and get my message out there. I mean, just to tell you another story, one of my uncles, he was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and he had to take the pills to control it. And he said to me, a nephew, I need to do some exercise. Can you teach me what to do? And how do I get myself from zero to at least 5K? So I gave him a plan. I told him. And then eventually he reversed the tablet thing. And he's, doing it by a diet.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, so the point about being part of an ethnic minority, obviously there's a difference in diet. There's the fact that medical research is often based around the majority demographic. Mm-hmm. But I'm also really interested, we touched upon you obviously not being drunk because of your Muslim faith. Yeah. There's been a lot of focus in the press around your feats in the context of being Muslim, in particular because I believe you were the first British Muslim to summit Everest. Secondly, you did it while fasting for Ramadan. Is what you do, when you talk about inspiring and motivating, is that primarily focused on inspiring and motivating other Muslims, or is it for everyone? Is it for your community or all young people out there who want to go from triple jump to mountains?
It's for everybody. Everybody can relate to what I do because they don't have to be Muslim or Christian or Jewish or whatever faith they choose. It's for everybody to be inspired. And I think a lot of people can take a lot of things away from what I have to say because I'm just a guy. I mean, I used to work in an office. I used to sit at my desk wilting away until I decided to do something and have a bigger cause, if you know what I mean. Because through my climbs, I don't know, I'm sure you're aware, I raise money as well for charity. I've probably raised close to £1 million now through all the endeavours, you know, over the last 5 years. So that's another thing. I mean, it's like a double whammy. I mean, I get to do what I like doing, inspire people, but also help charity. So, I mean, it's a big thing. I mean, and I'm grateful that I'm able to do it.
And at what point during doing that, because most of that which you've described, you've done entirely yourself. So at what point did you think, right, I need an agent? How did you go about trying to find one? And why did you get in contact with the people you chose to reach out to?
Once I gained a little exposure and I gained a little fame, I had offers coming in from everywhere. We've had this conversation. I mean, people were offering me things left, right, and center, and I didn't know what was real and what wasn't real, and which string to, you know, tug on, because, you know, you might tug on something and it might lead to nothing. So I needed someone to guide me and help me, and we've grown so much since I joined. You know, I mean, it's amazing how big we've gone.
Well, yeah, you've done brilliant things. You've got a family of other diverse talent around you. But when you say about having an agent to help you understand, you know, what's real and what's not, like, what specifically was the concern? Was it about money, not knowing what you should charge? Was it about fictitious opportunities? What is it?
Everything, Katie, because I didn't know. Money was a big issue, because obviously you need money to climb, and every expedition costs tens of thousands. So it was about money, and also I didn't know what was real and what wasn't real, because people can say whatever they want to say and it might sound real at the time, but when you go home you might think, I don't know if this is true or not, if it's real or not. Because I was given the world, you know, after I came back from Everest, and, you know, nothing came of it, I'll be honest.
And what's the benefit been? Because I believe that before you were part of a talent agency, you didn't really have the opportunity to spend time with other people with public profiles in that way. So you might come across mountaineers when you're doing your mountaineering, but not necessarily other people working on brand campaigns or doing public speaking in the same way you were. Has that changed your outlook, having access to those people?
Yeah, it has. I mean, I've been to a few places where I've done public speaking and I've done some brand work and stuff like that. And I think the opportunity has given me experience. And now if anything comes along, I'd probably be a lot better at it. And, you know, I could hone in on those, you know, experiences and make a better outcome of it.
And so what is next? You said that you've made a step forward since you've had an agent. You've got the 14 peaks in your sight. You're already partway through that challenge.
Yes.
What's the next phase?
I want to get through the 14 peaks first, because
survival's a good one.
Survival is the most important thing. Once I've done that, I'd probably want to tell my story, maybe write a book. I mean, I've had book offers. We've spoken about a book offer that I've had. But I don't think I'm ready for that yet. I think a little bit more time spending doing what I do, and then maybe, you know, we can write a book. But I think going around and telling people my story, working with different brands, showing them, you know, because I'm quite unique. It's a very niche thing that I do. I'm also unique in the sense that I can, connect with diverse markets, because I'm a general role model. I could be a general role model as well as a specific role model for a specific Asian people. that's what I want to do. I want to tell people my story, make them aware, and work with brands and help them increase their sales. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what brands want, don't they? They want good people. They want people that can, you know, bring value to their brand, and not just monetary value, but also, you know, a grandeur to their, you know, brand.
Intangible value,
a
meeting of you understanding their purpose and it matching your purpose, and kind of, yeah, I understand.
Yeah, our values, as long as they align, we can work with any brand, can't we? Because it's about what we believe in and what we want to achieve at the end of it. Even if it's not profits, it might be, you know, 100 more people hiking or trekking. So that's pretty much
Did it ever cross your mind when you were looking for an agent that you would be better looked after if you had an agent of the same demographic as you?
No.
So what were you looking for then?
I was just looking for someone that can get the job done. That's what I was looking for. I don't think demographics is important in this thing, because I don't want to just inspire, you know, Asians. I want to inspire everyone, because my story is quite unique, and it's not just unique for Asians, it's unique for everybody. Yes, I'm the first British Muslim to climb Mount Everest. However, I'm still a person, I'm a human being at the end of the day, and we bleed the same, so I want to inspire everybody. So that's why demographics or, you know, the background of the agent, it's not really important to me.
Well, I am looking forward to the next chapter. I also very, very much hope that you survive the rest of the peaks. What is the timeline for that? When can we check in?
Well, the thing is,
how can we check in?
The 14peaks.org, well, I've not wearing the t-shirt, but the 14peaks.org is the website where you can actually track me. There's a live tracker that I carry with me, and you can see where I am when I'm on expedition.
I will be following every day. What an incredible goal and achievement. If you would like to get in touch with us, at Good Vibes Only Talent is the way on social media, or at gvo@goodvibesonlytalent.com by email. Join us next time for another amazing guest and more insight into the world of talent management. Other than that, for now, from me, it is goodbye.